Here we are again with Richard Slotkin. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell is here. Just before gets his chance over here, when you're talking about Abraham Lincoln and you're talking about America, you are also talking about the world. Because many of these same lessons and conflicts and issues are being played out all over the world in every nation state in whatever way, shape, or form it is in currently. Aren't these universal issues you're talking about that happen to be coming back at this time? This isn't just an American story, is it?
No, like any important story, it does have universal resonance.
Well, how would you articulate those?
I would articulate those as a critic, I think, rather than as a novelist. As a novelist, I have to be so, in a sense, drenched in the language and the mindset of the society within which I'm writing, out of whose history I'm attempting to speak, that I can't be too attentive as I'm thinking about it, as I'm writing, to the larger significance of what I'm doing. I have really two modes of writing. In my scholarly work, my nonfiction, I deal with broad constructs. I deal with ideas about politics and culture that have a particular application to the United States, but also a kind of general significance. But in novelizing, what I'm doing is trying to give the reader the sense of being immersed in an experience. And to do that, I have to do an impersonation. I have to know what I know about from the year 2000, but I have to forget it also and act as if I only knew what 3, 4, 5, 6, 19-year-old Abe Lincoln knew out in the backwoods of Indiana in the 1810s and 20s.
When the world was radically different.
And when his world, above all, when his world is radically circumscribed. So that what I try to do is, as he moves outward, as he grows up, and as he takes the journey down the Mississippi, which is really his journey into a larger world and his awakening, I suggest a movement to a larger scale, but I don't hand the reader the message about that larger scale. I leave the journey, in a sense, to be completed in the reader's own mind, which I think is what the novelist has to do. You have to, at a certain point, resign your story to the reader.
Well, and you don't tell me. And the moral of the story is.
Well, yeah. Well, some do.
Yes.
Some do. And you sometimes get faulted, by the way, for not doing that.
Well, and I would think, as a historian and academic, that's very hard
well, it
to
is.
Not do.
Yes. Well, the reason that I alternate between writing fiction and nonfiction is that I can sort of purge the system of excess ideas and arguments.
Yeah.
When I conceived this project, I was really just going to write an essay that would have begun the way our conversation began, about arguments about Abraham Lincoln. But as I was writing the essay, it sounded like a mean drunk in a bar who's looking for a fight.
And that was you?
And that was me. And if I couldn't get a fight with this guy on the right, I was going to get into a fight with the guy on the left. And then I was going to challenge everybody in the house to a brawl on this. And I just realized I didn't want to, that was not the way I wanted to speak about the man. It was not the way I wanted to articulate the sense I had of what he was about.
Speaking of purgatives...
Were we?
Yes, we were. I have to confess that when I picked this book up, I was, 40,000 books. One more damn book about Lincoln. Yep. Do I need to do this? And I frankly was not interested until we looked at the other part of your work. And part of what I found fascinating is what you're describing is the work you've done on American mythologizing.
Mm-hmm.
As a context within which this book comes forward,
mm-hmm.
out of that knowledge base that you work from, to me made it a radically different perspective. The treatment of myth and the understanding of myth, particularly the American myth, is just fascinating. And the mythology as you represent it, as I understand it, Lincoln sits smack at the middle of it. And I say that for two reasons.
Yeah.
Because reading your other work,
let him just sort of in 25 words or less tell us how he represents that other work. We're talking about 2,500 words pages, three major volumes.
Well, yeah, the other work that I've done is on is a three volume study of what I call the myth of the frontier, and basically this was the way in which Americans classically summed up the meaning of their history as the violent movement of white European civilization, so-called, into the wilderness and displacing the non-white Native Americans and subjugating the Africans who were imported as labor. That is the fable of American progress, which I call in the first volume of the series regeneration through violence or rebirth through violence. And I really do see that as being the essential American story. And I guess I want to emphasize two things. One is race, and the other is violence. That in order to achieve the national identity, you need you represent the meaning of our achievement through heroes who are men of action, men of violent action. Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett, General Custer, Buffalo Bill, Wyatt Earp, and their modern equivalents in media, the John Wayne, Clint Eastwood.
Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, projected in science fiction, projected on into the future as a model of what's going to be, not just of what is or what has been.
So that is the context.
That is the context
out of which your
for
larger
this.
Work.
Well, yes. And so that if you try to conceive of a new kind of American hero, if you want to conceive of his Americanness, then the moral issues that he must deal with are, shall I kill? Have I a right to kill? Have I a right to use violence? Because the myth tells you when you have a right to, a license to kill. And what's my take on race? How do I respond to the person on the other side of the color line? And when I reconceived Lincoln's life, it was with those two emphases in mind. There are many ways to tell a sure. story. But that was my take.
Well,
on it.
And in that sense, the notion of violence and the notion of race comes out very clearly in your work, and certainly is central to American history. And Lincoln would seem to be, as you described earlier, the archetype. I mean, he sits more or less at the center. That's not mm-hmm. to say there wasn't a lot else going on, but from a historical standpoint, his experience on the frontier, his experience with violence, major violence, the most violence this country has ever endured. And his role with respect to race, he is just archetypal.
Yes,
he's sort of a primitive in the system. And until we can deal with that historically mm-hmm. and mythologically, which I assume is why you did what you did.
Yeah, and a myth forms around somebody that you can't let go of because there's something unresolved. They still represent a problem that has not died, and the issues of the Civil War have not died. There still are issues.
Well, and interestingly, we've done a variety of programs on that subject, and the standard American version is that we address the issue of race with the Civil War, mm-hmm. that the Emancipation Proclamation solved the problem of mm-hmm. slavery, and then we forget the intervening 100 years.
Yes.
When we had what was effectively, and in some ways, a more pernicious variant.
Jim Crow.
Yeah. And the state-sanctioned terrorism that went along with it, at least in certain parts of the country. And that seems to fit in within the mythology that you have articulated. And that is something we just don't talk about. Now, for good reason, I think.
Well,
denial is very pleasant sometimes.
Well, we talk about it in symbols that allow us to treat it indirectly and safely. For the Jim Crow terrorism, for example, the lynching. It's not just Southern. It's also Midwest and Far West, north of the Ohio in considerable ways. But we don't really. There are stories that do turn that into a myth. I'm thinking here of Birth of a Nation, the film Birth of a Nation, the novel The Klansman. But more typically, what you get is westerns, in which a good man takes the law into his own hands, and kill somebody who's identified as bad for good but private reasons. The whole code of the vigilante, which is very much a part of both our national life and our popular culture, comes out of that kind of racial confrontation.
But what I hear you saying, though, is in your academic work, is this is mythologically sanctioned.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And when you say that, there are there are two streams of myth that need to be talked about. There would be local myth, which would be pretty specific about who the groups are that are legitimate targets for this kind of violence. And there are the national myths, which are pervaded by national media, commercial media, in which the structure of that action, that is killing somebody for private ends, killing somebody to keep the town clean, you get a sanitized version, in some cases a deracialized version, not always, but often. But it's understood that there's a racial component to that way of thinking. If you look at the way in which bad guys are visualized in these urban gunfighter kinds of movies, they're always always dark skinned or swarthy skinned. They're or physically marked in some way, so that the message that comes across is that those who have a distinction in the body, a physical distinction, are marked for ill treatment, as legitimate ill treatment.
By the larger society.
By the larger society. Now, when I was thinking about Lincoln, I had to apply that to what I was trying to do was to trace his childhood, that is, before he's the man of action, before he's the myth, when he is exploring the possibilities and the morality of how one acts, how a man acts.
Let's come back to that. This is Richard Slotkin. He is our guest on The Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, are here with Richard, and we'll all be back in just a moment. Please do be with us.